Welcome back to Guilty and the Ghostly. I'm Audrey.
I'm Josh.
And we are joined by Dr. Holly Hobbs. Dr. Hobbs is a cultural researcher, psychic medium, a numerologist based in New Orleans. She's earned her PhD in ethnomusicology and has dedicated her career to exploring the connections between culture, folklore, and the unexplained. And after reading your bio, do you ever sleep? Is there ever a time that you just relax?
Well, that's the way people have to write bios, right? You have to make yourself sound super fancy. I promise, there's a lot of space in between to do fun stuff.
Well, good, good. Well, when I was looking at your bio, and even when I was telling Josh about it, I have really never heard of the ethnomusicology. Would you mind breaking that down a little bit further for us?
Well, you know, 99 out of 100 people haven't, so that's okay.
Okay, perfect.
It's really just a branch of cultural anthropology, right? So okay. If we think about ethnomusicology as being the study of how people make music and why, right? The type of music that they're making has something to do with the community around them, that has something to do with the family they come from, the culture they live within, right? So ethnomusicology and folklore are just two sides of the same coin, right? And very, very interchangeable in many different ways, except for obviously ethnomusicology is a little bit more music oriented. But all of it fits within the rubric of cultural anthropology, which is basically just the study of people moving through space and time and why, right? So all of that fits very well with all my work that I do spiritually, and because it truly is just the study of how energy moves at the end of the day.
That makes sense.
That's really neat. And we're big music people. I love music. I can't sing, but I love music. Now, he plays instruments, and his family's really big into music. So it's always had a part of us. And just, you know, it affects your energy and your mood. And how do you think that translates to, like, the spiritual realm?
Well, I said somewhere else, I can't remember what conversation I was having the other day, but, you know, and please, everybody's going to disagree based on what art that they are involved with and how and why, but I truly think that music is the closest to God we get in terms of our connection to the other side. And of course, I'm talking about God in very loose terms, right? God could be anything to you, just something bigger than yourself, how energy moves through space and time. But music is the closest, in my humble opinion, that we can get to touching grace, right? Touching energy, touching higher, something higher than ourselves. The frequency, just energetically speaking, the frequency of music can change the room that you're in, can change the tone of your day, can change how you think about something, right? And people have known this from the beginning of time. That's why people sing in church. That's why people incorporate music into their rituals, right? Because everybody knows on some level, even if they don't know it from a academic or philosophical standpoint, that music is doing something to change a room.
Yeah. That makes sense. And I think with everybody, you know, everybody knows music. You may not be the same, but I mean, that's kind of like a communication that anybody can use through music. Yeah. So
I've always said that music is like a language that everybody speaks.
Yeah,
that's it. Just like energy, right? And so not everybody can can create a good piece of visual art, right? Not everybody can build a chair, not everybody can, but everybody can, even if you're bad at it, everybody can hum, everybody can sing a song, right? Everybody can dance, everybody can do these different things. And so it's much more accessible in many different ways than other forms of art.
Do you use it when you're doing sessions with people, like, you know, to help open yourself up a little bit more, or maybe ground you a little bit more? How do you use music?
I usually, actually, not with sessions, with readings with people, but I always use it when I'm going into a house, right? Now, I don't do many paranormal investigations. I do some, right? And we'll talk about that with our work with Candlelight Folklore Society. But more so, there are certain house blessings that I do, right, that I'll do for friends or that I'll do for, you know, somebody who really needs some help. And I always incorporate music into that, because it lays the energetic groundwork. And so if you can start by coming in and playing some music that levels an energetic playing field, then you can really start to work with the energy in that space. You can intuit things more easily, right? And it's much easier to work in the space once you calm everything down and once you have it all kind of vibing in the same way. And one of the things that I'm big on talking about with people is that everybody can do mediumship on some level. We're born with it, right? It's as simple as breathing. And sure, some people, based on their numerology or based on their family lineage or based on trauma, trauma's a big one, right? That opens you up to the other side. And of course, that beautiful right-brained ability that helps us connect. And that tends to be more overly developed with artists, artists and musicians, seers, visionaries, right? But everybody on some level has mediumship ability. And so when we're talking about interesting things like paranormal investigations or hauntings or anything, it's totally great and fine to use gadgets, right? Gadgets are amazing. For my last birthday, my husband and I went to the Shining Hotel in Estes Park, Colorado, and we did a Estes Method session using all of the gadgetry that were the exact ones that you're supposed to do. And it was so fun, right? Gadgets are amazing. But at the end of the day, you should ideally be able to go into a haunted space, if this is something that you're interested in or want to do, and be able to intuit things, work with the energy of that space, bring something back, bring back an understanding. And then maybe with some practice, you can help bring some stable energy into that space. Now, we can't always get rid of spirits, and maybe that's not our path to do so, right? Some spirits deserve to be where they are, but you could at least bring them a little bit of healing.
That makes sense. And how did you find out you had these abilities and start working with them? I mean, was it just one thing, or like, oh, wait a minute, or what, did it kind of build over time?
Well, everybody thinks that it's like the movies, right? Everybody thinks that you're going to have some, you know, angel come and whisper in your ear or tell you something. And then it's this massive initiation. And then all of a sudden, everything turns on, like Whoopi Goldberg and Ghost, right? Everybody thinks it's like that. And it's not. Right. Maybe there's those cases every once in a while where you get some abrupt shift. But from nearly all of us, this is slow and subtle growth over time. Now, there have been a couple things that have happened to me that I always tell the story of being really little. I don't remember how old I was, maybe 5, maybe 6. And I was asleep in my bedroom. And then I woke up and I was awake looking at everything. And then I felt hands touch my shoulders, and I reached back and they felt like old hands, and there was no fear, there was no nothing. And so I just sat there, right, laid there with my hands on top of these hands, I don't know for how long. And then at some point later on, I went back to bed, woke up next morning, everything was fine. But at some point later, I realized that those hands had reached through a wall behind me. So that was what mediums would call some sort of initiation. Right. I don't know. Maybe it was my guardian angel. We all have them. I have no idea. But I do know that that was the first time that I felt really connected, touched, right, by the other side. And then so many of us have these lives where, even if we have a difficult childhood, we all know what it feels like to have a sense of childlike wonder. right? And so we go through this process of being a child. We're so deeply connected to the other side. And then the teenage years hit. And everything is all about ego, and everything is all about money and status and who says what and who's friends with who. And then sex gets involved and drugs and everything else, that this gauntlet that people have to pass through, right, in life. And then at some point in your 20s or 30s or maybe even 40s, or, you know, honestly, some people never do wake up. But at some point within that, you look up and you're like, what happened? Yeah. What was all this? What happened, right? So the whole process of healing, the whole process of being tapped in and connected with spirit is really so you could get back to that place of childlike wonder. And so you could get back to that feeling of being really totally deeply connected. You're basically becoming your authentic self, the self you were always meant to be. And how that connects with paranormal spaces is that you can use that deep connection to get a really, really strong intuitive sense.
Yeah. You told us that story about you, you know, waking up with your hands on your shoulders. And I had a similar experience when I was younger. So my family, it's always been said that the females in our family, just they're very intuitive. And I've always have been, but I always kind of said that's childhood trauma. Like that's kind of, I can read people very well. And it's just for me, you know, that safety, you have to, that survival mode. But I was younger at church camp, believe it or not, of all places, but I was in a safe place. I was really happy. And I had woken up and my youth leader was asleep across the room, but I had woken up and I had seen her, who I thought was her, standing by her bed. And when I looked again, it was almost like she was glowing. But then I looked down at her bed and she was in her bed. And you would think I would have been like, whoa, something's not right. But I had this wave of comfort and peace and just love almost. And like, it, I just rolled over and went to sleep and was like, that's perfectly normal. That's fine. And to this day, like, I got chills now to this day, just thinking about that. I'm just like, what did I see? Was it her guardian angel? Was it somebody? I don't know. But it looked like her, but I could tell it wasn't her. And obviously she was laying in her bed. And so I, to this day, have no idea what I've seen or what it was. And how do you talk people through that, I guess, of, you know, open your mind. It could have been more. It could have been something else. You know, how do you get people to realize, you know, not everything's just your imagination, and there is otherworldly things out there.
Well, you said it yourself. So, you know, and first of all, that's amazing. And I got chills too. And that's always, that's always my message for when something is true. Right. Okay. So I can tell that you experienced something that was very real and was very present in that room. And still to this day, it affects you. And that's one of those questions that most people ask when we're talking about seances or table tipping, right? Things that are more on the deeper end of the paranormal spectrum. Aren't you scared? And the answer is exactly what you said. No, because you get that feeling. It's unmistakable. Yeah. It's this feeling of this, and this is where English words just fail, because if you say things like a sense of love, people are like, okay, so what? Right?
Yeah.
It's not that. Imagine love with a capital L, which is bigger than the brightest light in the entire world. That's it. And you get this feeling that is just absolutely unmistakable, and there is no ability to have fear in that space. And within that space, I've seen crazy stuff. I've seen things flying around a room. I've seen, you know, I won't go further in what I've seen because then people will turn it off. They'll be like, she's lying. Not, promise. But I've seen some interesting things, right? But within that space, you cannot feel anything other than the presence of that overwhelming sense of love, which is just what you said. And so when I'm working with other people, and I do a lot of teaching mediumship these days and mentoring students, and when I'm doing that, that's the feeling that I try to create a situation where they can feel, so that then they know what to look for. Right. And within the context of just a little minor reading, I do these kind of guided meditations, which are actually shamanic journeys where people can connect with their guides, and they get that little glimpse of how it feels. And it's this fuzzy feeling, right? Again, words fail. It's kind of fuzzy feeling. I always tell people it's a tiny, tiny, tiny bit. Y'all know what it feels like to put your finger in a light socket and you get that weird, I don't know what word, jiggly feeling. It's that,
it's buzzy.
It's unmistakable. Now imagine that feeling, but taking out all the bad parts, right? And keeping the good part and just making it really, really subtle. That is the beginning of that feeling. And it changes for other people, right? But for most people, it feels like somewhere within that spectrum. And it's very interesting because when you go into a haunted space, that is also a feeling that you will feel.
Yeah.
We actually went to the Haunted Hill House and I had that feeling in the backyard.
Yeah.
Whoa, it was that's crazy.
Really crazy. Yeah, yeah, it was very interesting.
I want to hear about that. Tell me.
Okay, so there is a infamous haunted house here in Texas in Mineral Wells, which Mineral Wells is a very haunted location. So we're kind of new at this. We'd never really done this. We had never really done a ghost hunt on our own. So they had a spring tour where you're allowed to, they kind of guide you. So they have investigators there that are professionals that kind of help you and show you what to do and just kind of guide you, help you as much as you want. And I'll let you tell her what you were feeling in the backyard.
Yeah, so when we get there, we were brought to the backyard where everybody was kind of staged. and we're standing near one particular part of the house. And that feeling, basically exactly how you described it, just kind of started coming over me. And I told Audrey, I was like, man, I have a really weird feeling about this. And she's like, yeah, it's kind of heavy here. And, of course, we both are feeling the same thing, and we talked to several people that had been there previously, and they'd told us about their experiences. And the first room that we happened to go to happened to be the room just where we were standing. And from that point, what was the method that we used? I'm not very versed on this. This is her thing. She kind of drugged me along.
Sure, but I love hearing, but my favorite thing is to hear people's perspectives and experiences when they're not well-versed in this stuff, right? Because those raw emotions are so, so powerful.
Yeah, and they were. They were so crazy. But we get in that room and we start recording and we all introduce ourselves. There's these two other people there with us. And of course, you know, we got stuck with the one guy that is the absolute
skeptic. Huge skeptic. Oh my gosh. Didn't want to be there. He was forced to go with his wife. Yeah.
So of course we have our energy there, which, you know, we're very accepting. We're wanting to see what we can find. And then of course this guy, his energy is just completely negative.
Just block. Just
so we have,
didn't want it.
We have both energies going on at the same time. And throughout this entire house, we're getting all kinds of different things happening. Like on the very first one where there was this little boy that had been found hanging by a swing set right outside that window. Right.
Wow.
And we had gotten, it's what sounded like a boy's voice.
Yeah.
Say the other lady's name on the recording.
Yeah. It was pretty cool. And what's crazy is, you know, you would go to different rooms. So that room to me felt very heavy.
Yeah.
And we ended up going to a shadow room. And I don't know how to explain it. I was almost excited. Almost like a, I don't know, just happy's not the right word, but drawn to it, I guess. And we had a few experiences. It was really interesting. I had done the Estes method the very first time that night. We had some really cool happenings. Went through the rest of the night. And at the end of the night, you're allowed to have free range. Go to whatever room you want. Because you only had a certain amount of time in each room during the tour. And I told him, I was like, something's telling me to go back to that room. They called it the Shadow Man room. And we had like so much happened. Like the ghost box said my name. I mean, out of nowhere.
Whoa, that's crazy.
I don't know. I just felt drawn to that room, and it seemed like a lot of the activity that was happening in the house that we were experiencing was centered around me. And it was just, it was crazy. It was insane. And part of me was like, this is really cool. I would love to see what I could do with this. But the other part of me is also, it's the unknown. You're kind of scared. So how would you, I guess, tell somebody if they do want to try to tap into it and see what they have, what they can work with, what they have, how do you do that safely?
Okay. So the bottom line, there aren't that many fundamental truths in the world, right? There are a number that we live by, universal laws that we can't escape. But one of those is, if you keep your vibration high enough, nothing can harm you on the spiritual side, right? So what do I mean by that? Your vibration is your energy field, right? It's where your soul resides. Think of it as that circle of light around you. Everybody's got one, right? And so within this circle of light and this kind of soul-based energy field you have, your vibration is how high and how strongly your energy is vibrating within that circle. So you can get your vibration up high through all the normal stuff that make you feel good, right? Good food, good water, exercise, love, hugs, animals, nature, all the stuff, right? Also through a strong spiritual practice. And what you can do, sure, there's ways. You can create an altar, which is a massive one that I talk about and I tell everybody to do. Clearing your energy field with salt, a salt shower, taking salt in your hand and going into the shower and clearing your energy field. Sure, those help. But one of the biggest things you can do is begin to pray. As in, give permission to the other side, right? If you don't like organized religion and you don't like the word prayer, you can call it whatever you want, talking out loud, doesn't matter. But everybody has a guiding team that is assigned to them when they come into this world, and giving permission to them to help them come close to you is the thing that shifts everything. And then once you begin to give permission to them, and it could just be as simple and as clumsy as, I don't know who you are, I don't know where you are, but I give permission to all the light around me to begin to work with me in a way that I understand. Send me signs, show me whatever, right? There's a thousand ways to do this, but those are the basic understandings. And if you begin to work in that way, your vibration begins to raise so that when you walk into a haunted space, right, you're not worried about taking something home. You're not worried about having something affect you. Now, compare that with, let's say you've had a really bad day, and you've fought with your partner, or you've gotten in trouble at work, anything that can make you feel bad, and then you go into a haunted space. What do you think your experience there is going to be versus the other side of what I just said, right?
Much more
likely to bring something home with you. Much more likely to connect with lower vibration spirits in that space, right? So because spiritual energy has the whole range of emotion just like humans do, right? It goes from the most delightful spirit to the lowest of the low, which some people call demonic, right? Which, sure, probably exists. I think it's very, very rare. Right. Most of what we see in this world is just really low vibrational energy by people who have really dark, low vibrations. That's by far the most that we see. But depending on where you are in your vibration is where and how you're going to connect and the type of experience you're going to have. And then it also means that if you're focusing on your keeping your vibration high and clear, and you go into a really scary, dark, difficult place, that you won't have it emotionally affect you in the way that it would otherwise. For example, one of the scariest and darkest places that I've ever been, and I've been lots of places at this point, is the Missouri State Penitentiary in Jeff City. And I don't know if you guys have heard anything about it, but it was recently closed. I mean, I want to say maybe just 20 years ago or 15 years ago, but it had been open since, you know, the 1800s, perhaps even earlier. And there's one cell block that I was just like, I don't think I can do this, right? And I do this. So it was really, really hard and really, really scary. And, but I went in and I was able to stay in my little bubble and feel what that felt like and leave without having a really, really serious effect on me.
Yeah.
Right. And so I always worry about, paranormal investigators who don't know that or who don't practice keeping their vibration high. Right. Because that stuff can absolutely affect you in all the ways that you can probably imagine. It's just common sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when we went, you know, obviously, like I said, it was the first time that I've done something like this, but I had heard a good ritual is to imagine basically you wrapping yourself with a protective ribbon. Like, this is me. This is, you know, I'm here. I'm curious, but you can't attach. And so I did that before we went in. He did not at all. And I feel like he felt a lot more of the heaviness than what I did, because he would point it out and I didn't really feel it at all. So that makes sense to,
yeah, totally,
set those intentions.
And you were doing the same thing that I was saying, just in other words, you used a ribbon, I use a circle, right? It doesn't matter. It's the same thing. It's about just visualizing yourself protected in light. And you can experience things, but it's not going to affect you in the same way. Now, there are certain things that people can do. Wearing a hat into a haunted space is always a good idea if you're worried about it, because everything comes through the crown chakra. So a lot of people, when they come do house blessings or when they'll do a house clearing, they'll actually wear a hat to protect their energy field. So that's always possible. So, you know, if you're somebody, and you're always wearing a hat, just like my husband. It helps. It helps.
Yeah. I never would have even thought about that.
Yeah, I wouldn't have either. Very interesting. Well, I have to ask you, so a numerologist, I know very vague details. I need more information on this because I am so fascinated by it. How does that work, and how do you, I mean, what is it for the people that don't know?
Numerology is by far the most powerful, fascinating phenomenon that I have ever had the privilege to study. It's just mind-blowing. Think about the numbers as being the biggest energy or the biggest framework we have to understand how energy moves, right? And so everybody has a numerology number. And based on the value of your birthday, you add up the numbers of the birthday one by one, and it comes to a two-digit number. And then you add that two-digit number together, and then most people end up being a number 1 through 9. And then you get to the master angel numbers. That's when your birthdays add up to 11, 22, 33, or 44. And that means something different. But everybody has a numerological value. Now, it's really interesting because I was listening to one of your podcasts about Ken Rex McElroy, right? Who you did previously. And me being from Missouri, I was only, you know, 1 or 2 years old when that happened. But I grew up in the 80s and people talked about it. Because Skidmore is about 2 hours or something from Columbia, where I'm from. And so it was just something that people talked about, right? It was something that everybody just knew. It was this crazy case that was just on my radar the whole time growing up. And so I loved hearing your podcast. But and Ken Rex McElroy, I always say, if you got to have 3 names to be really bad. Right? Yeah. Matters. Yeah. It matters.
It does.
So if his birthday is correct on the internet, then he is a numerology number 3, which is very interesting because 3s are creativity, artistry. They're always creating something into being. But everything has a light and a shadow side, right? Everything has good connotations, bad connotations, and everything in between. One of the calling cards of a numerology 3 is having a personality that is artificial, perhaps, or performative. Right. Yeah. And then very, very, very few people know the actual person. So if that, if we, you know, talk about that in comparison with somebody who is, you know, who's really monstrous, then there's nothing in his numerology to say that he was going to be destined to be what he was. But I will say that if you add trauma onto a numerology 3, that external personality can turn sociopathic pretty fast, right? Yeah, which is super, super interesting.
Do you ever look at, like, neighbors or friends and, like, do their numerology and be like, that makes sense?
Told you how much I spent many hours of the day I spend calculating numbers, you would think I was nuts. So I'm not going to admit to that. But yes, everybody, right? Yeah. And my friend Jennifer, we you know, at least once a day, we will text, we'll have Googled some celebrity or somebody in the news or something. And that, did you know so-and-so is a numerology 4? Oh my God. Right. And then we'll go back and forth. I calculate everything. And it is, once you get really, really deep into the numbers, it is so predictive that it begins to change your whole understanding of how life works. And that's when things begin to get interesting.
Yeah. And does that kind of coexist with, like, horoscopes and stuff? Is that the same thing? Are those two separate entities?
Think about horoscopes and astrology being kind of the inner part of a circle, and numerology is the biggest circle that we have. So all of it kind of works in conjunction with each other. But the planets and the stars and everything move according to the numbers.
Okay, that makes sense.
So then the numbers are just the biggest circle we have, the big framework we have.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Interesting.
Yeah, I would have never thought about it that way.
I know y'all always talk about popular culture and films and TV shows and everything, but I will tell you that Lost is a very numerological show. Did either of you watch Lost?
I love that
show. Actually, like last year, he started from the beginning and watched the entire thing.
I watched it in like a week.
Yeah.
I couldn't stop.
That's not possible. You cannot watch that thing in a week. Those are six seasons of like 30 episodes each. Trust me, I know.
So good. I don't know how long it took me, but I watched it until I was done.
Yeah, he was in it.
I have seen that show probably 4 times all the way through. Back to, not back to back, I shouldn't say that, but, you know, across the years I have, and it is a very mediumistic show. It is a very numerological show. Those numbers that they keep repeating, you know, of course I added up those numbers, and it comes to a numerology 9. And a 9 is the end all of all numbers, the end and the beginning of all things. 9 is a wild card. 9 is a big, huge arc of healing. At the beginning, it's drama and it's chaos and it's addictions and misunderstandings. And at the very end, it's as big and as far as healing can go on this planet. So, you know, somebody at Lost knew the numerology. That's all I'm going to say.
That's interesting. Wow.
So for somebody that wants to learn more about it and just kind of study up and kind of get a vague understanding of it, do you have any recommendations on where to go?
Sure. There is one book that I always recommend. Now, I do the oral tradition of numerology, and it's Pythagorean numerology, and there are countless different numerological traditions in the world. And they're all equally valid, but we use Pythagorean, the Greek system. And if you're interested in learning more about that, then The Divine Triangle is a book that I really like that goes into detail about what the numbers mean. But I do the oral tradition of that. It's the oral tradition that has been passed down for a very, very long time. So we do things slightly differently, but there's many, many overlaps. So I really, really love Divine Triangle as something that will help give you resources to move forward. It's really cool.
Yeah, we'll definitely have to check that out.
And if you guys give me your birth dates after this, I will do your numerology and send you a little thing, because everybody has an anti-number too, and that is just as predictive, a bad luck number that is just as predictive as what your numerology life path number is.
Interesting. So when you get, you know, when you're doing readings, or if you're doing the numerological thing, if you get kind of maybe not so great news or not so great, you know, how do you approach that with your clients?
Well, there are many different things we can talk about. If I'm just talking about numerology, it tends to be really helpful for people, because I'll give you an example. So I had somebody not too long ago who I did their numbers and they were a 4. And I was telling them, well, your bad luck number is a 5, and this has everything to do with who you date, the address you live in, the year, right? And we went into detail. I got her address. And then I said, okay, 2021 was the last 5 year. So we found out that she was living in her anti-number house, and her life just totally blew up on her anti-year. Now, telling somebody that and giving them the tools to understand how energy moves, as you can imagine, is really, really super healing and super helpful. Yeah. Because otherwise, you're sitting here just thinking that terrible things happen randomly. And of course, yes, sometimes that appears to be the case. But you're thinking here, like, anything could happen at any time, right? And if you have an understanding of how energy moves through space and time, you can have a much better understanding of how to help yourself, how to control, how to begin to work with the energy instead of against the energy. And it can be super helpful. Within the context of a mediumship reading, if I really connect with something bad that's coming or something that's happening, let's say somebody being cheated on, for example, which is not totally a common one, but it does happen sometimes. I am, to the best of my ability, never going to tell somebody something that gives them fear, right? Yeah. Because first rule is I could be wrong, right? Second rule is I don't want to be responsible for that person's reaction to that. And thirdly, it's not my place. I'm here to help people learn how to heal themselves, right? Yeah. I'm not healing anybody. I'm here to help people connect with the other side so they can have the resources that they need to help themselves in co-creation with spirit. So I'm never going to give them information that makes them look at the world as a scary place. But if I really felt that somebody was being cheated on, for example, or had something that they really needed to know, I would just double down on helping them connect with their own guides and giving them all these resources to be able to do so, knowing that in time, their guides will give them the information that they need internally in order to help switch that. So I'm not the one who's giving them a fear-based response, right? And, you know, unfortunately, we have a lot of people in this world, especially now, as systems continue to break down in our world, we have a lot more people working in these realms, right? And we all know people who are tell somebody something scary to get more money, or tell somebody, you know, then you get to the far end of the grift phenomenon, which is, you know, oh, I think you have a curse on you, and for this much money more, I can help take care of that, right? You don't mess with any of that, you guys, right? Not that you would, but for anybody listening, go see somebody who makes you feel like you're connected with something bigger than yourself. That's how you should begin to connect with and know who to work with and who not. Do I feel good in this person's presence? Do I feel like I'm connecting with something higher than myself, right? Those are the things that you look for.
Makes sense. Have you heard the story of Natalie Wood and her mother and having the vision? Isn't that crazy?
That is wild. And, you know, I can't remember, but I can't remember what number she is. I think she's in numerology 9. I can do it right now and find out. But I did do Natalie Wood's numerology after I heard that, and it was fascinating. So I think she's a 9. We're going to do it right now and find out in real time. So she's July 20th, 1938. Okay. So July 20th. So 7 plus 2, we don't use the zeros, plus 1 plus 9 plus 3 plus 8 equals, oh, interesting. She's also a 3, just like Ken Rex McElroy, right? So it's, if you Google most Hollywood actors, most of them are 3s. And again, it's that level of performance, right? There is, their real self is kept, you know, in very, very close. And then there's a performative exterior that everybody knows, which is not the real them.
Yeah. Interesting.
Wow.
So I wonder if there's a correlation like with serial killers and stuff with their number.
So I did at some point, Jennifer actually did it, and then we talked about it. She went through and calculated every American president's numerology, which is super interesting, right?
Yeah.
Lots of master angel numbers, lots of numerology ones, like George Washington was a 1. So that is a leader, an entrepreneur, right? A self-starter, somebody who is very ego-driven, right? Then there's lots of 8s, money and power. But my big project and what I wanted to do was serial killers, which, you know, I haven't done much of. There were lots of 3s and lots of 5s in the beginning work that I've done, And Ken Rex McElroy was one of those that I had done. And the three, this weird exterior performativity seems to be a calling card for many of them.
How fascinating. Well, mm-hmm. if you do, I cannot wait.
You're all in?
Okay. Yeah, I'm all in. I'm all in. That's very interesting.
Yeah.
That's very interesting. Well, do you have one experience that you would say sticks with you today that just, you know, whether it's good or bad, just one experience that if you could only tell somebody one, what would it be?
Are we talking about readings or haunted houses or paranormal experiences?
You got a preference?
No, just...
to any of them, yeah.
Yeah, paranormal experience.
You want to do paranormal? Yeah, let's do paranormal.
Okay, let's see. So, I did tell you about the Missouri State Penitentiary, and that being just, that place was just vibrating with darkness. And, you know, I would almost say that if anybody's in the area, they should make it a point to stop there just to feel how it feels to feel real, deep, intense darkness on that level. Right.
I could only imagine the sadness in a place like that.
Yeah. All that, right? And you mix all these things together, and that's what makes a haunting that ends up sticking, right? Because there are so many, I mean, terrible things happen in so many people's houses, but not everybody's house retains some level of haunting. But if you can mix that with proximity to water is always a really big one, right? So if we're talking about Louisiana, paranormal stuff, Louisiana hauntings, all those plantations that had the really, really horrific histories and these horrific things that have happened over hundreds of years, they're all on water, right? Because that's how the plantation was run. They're all on these really deep underwater, underground water systems. And then having trapped energy also, especially when we're talking about a place like New Orleans, it's under sea level. So yeah. It's like a bowl and everything just gets stuck in there, right? And so it's very, very hard for energy to shift. If we're talking about how energy moves, having energy stuck in a bowl is something that's going to stay consistent over time. Now, like we talked about, there's ways to begin to help to heal or shift the energy in a space. But very often, if a place is haunted, it's going to stay haunted, right? No matter what you do. There was the Myrtles Plantation, right? People love to talk about Louisiana and to talk about New Orleans hauntings, and I'm no different. The place is extraordinary. We always need to be super, super careful when we're talking about plantations because they have such a horrific history, and we need to keep that in mind and give those places the adequate respect that they need, right? It's not appropriate to go in our normal kind of ghost hunting paraphernalia, right, with their gadgets and trying to mess with the spirits there, right? But also, that sort of in some way goes to most places because these are spirit people. And they deserve a level of respect, right? And so wherever we are, we should go in trying to treat the place with respect as much as we try to treat other people. But anyway, the Myrtles in St. Francisville, Louisiana, there were one of the calling cards of spirit and how spiritual energy moves is through synchronicity. And so synchronicity is just those meaningful coincidences, right? Something you're thinking about something and then you go to the store and you overhear a conversation about them talking about the exact same thing you were thinking about. Yeah. And then you turn on the TV or you turn on Instagram and there it is, right? So those are synchronicities. And so there were these really weird systems of synchronicities that led to me going to the Myrtles in this one particular night in 2019, and we ended up booking a private tour at night and just with one guide, and it was just three of us. And we went in, and it was just from start to finish, it was such a wild experience, right? There were, you could hear children laughing at one point. Now, I don't normally, you guys, hear or see stuff. I really don't. Nearly everything is in my mind's eye, and okay. I can get lots of information, but I don't really experience that much external to me. But that night, I experienced a lot of things external to me, right? People, little kids laughing, feelings. There was a ghost cat that rubbed up against me at one point on my leg. And I'm an animal person. And if you are, you know what that feels like. And nothing else feels like it, right? So there was a ghost cat, which, you know, ghost cats. How cool is that? Mm-hmm. And then, of course, right, connecting with the profound horrors that happened in a place where people owned other people, right? And really sitting with the level of horror that was and heaviness, but then also feeling all this other different type of energy in the space. And it was just everything together was just extraordinary. Yeah. And then there's the tale of the Brumley House, which is much more recent, which I think you and I talked about. And the Brumley House is actually in Missouri, only about 20 minutes away from where I am right now. My husband and I spend summers at Lake of the Ozarks, Missouri. And last summer in 2025, I was Googling, and I came upon this story about a haunted house in Brumley, Missouri. And so I looked it up. It was called the Haunted Castle House, and there was an email address, and I emailed, and the woman responded with very shortly and said, oh, yes, I'd be very interested in you coming to see. I was just trying to see what the house was like, maybe get a tour, maybe even see the outside of it, right, just because I'm interested. Yeah. And she responded and said, yes, we're actually doing a paranormal investigation tomorrow night, and we have one spot left. So, of course, I'm a studier of patterns, right? So I know synchronicity when I see one. So I was like, well, I'm in, right? Just tell me what to do. I'm there. So I went, and everything just lined up exactly as it should have, right? It was just that one spot left. Here's the time. Here's the go. It was 20 minutes away. Okay. I walk in, and as soon as I open the door, one of the big calling cards to me of a really, really haunted space is when the floor beneath my feet begins to shift. And it just totally did. I walked in and the floor shifted. It felt like the floor went to the ceiling. Now, of course, it didn't. It was just this weird kind of energy shift, right, that I could feel. And then I don't know how to explain it. It was almost like every room I went in had a different kind of energy tilting, sort of like a fun house. Right. And then from there throughout the night, I mean, I ended up I was there till like 3 a.m. And so we went through this whole thing and many, many different investigations. And the amount of connection and the things I could hear people talking. I could hear, again, those are the children laughing, people moving, footsteps, doors opening and closing on the, I mean, just, you know, anything that you can imagine. And then, of course, that night turned into a whole thing where my husband and I developed a relationship with the owners of the Brumley House, and we ended up making a little film about it, and we've gone back multiple times. And yes, anybody who's interested in seeing that, Candlelight Folklore Society is our vehicle for storytelling. We're making little documentaries and stories about paranormal things, haunted things, unseen things. And our YouTube is youtube.com/@ Candlelight Folklore Society. So if anybody is interested in seeing that, it's the Brumley House. But it was that mix of true synchronicity that led me there, and the extreme quality of the hauntings, and just how everything from start to finish felt extraordinarily fascinating. And it felt like I was in the presence of true, true energy, right? Because everything's energy. Everything's electromagnetic energy. And so it just, that whole place vibrates.
So do you feel like going to somewhere where you're familiar, and you like the Brumley House that you're talking about, so you've been there a few times, do you almost maybe build like a rapport with the spirit, so they're comfortable seeing you there? I would think they'd be more apt to make themselves known. Do you think that has any effect at all?
That is a fascinating question, and nobody's ever asked me. I have no idea.
Oh, okay.
Maybe.
Maybe, yeah.
Maybe, hopefully,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that'd be really
neat. Well, there's two, basically, right? And none of us know. We're just doing the best we can, trying to theorize all this stuff based on our own experiences and our own understandings. But to my mind, in my humble perspective, there's a couple of different types of hauntings. There is the hauntings by spirit, right? Spirit with a capital S, like a spirit person, which has intelligence, which can communicate with us, right? Can do things, is here to give information. And then there's what we would call residual hauntings, which is just, I walk up the stairs, I walk down the stairs, I walk up the stairs, I ring this bell, I don't ring this bell, right? And the residual hauntings are much more like what we would call trapped energy, right? Or an energy that it's like a spray of a perfume and that stays in the air, right? Or, you know, the outline of somebody rather than that actual somebody, right? That's the difference. And so a residual haunting, you can still feel it. It's still that feeling like that finger in a light socket, right? It's still that feeling, but it doesn't have any intelligence and you can't really communicate it with that in that way versus a spirit person, which can really. So of course, if there are spirit people in a house, I would like to think that they will be like, hey, it's you again.
Yeah.
Nice to see you. How you been? Right.
Friend. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially if you treat them with respect and, you know, treat them like a person and they're like you said, that intelligent haunting, I think they'd be more up to come say hi.
Sure, sure. And then residual hauntings, I don't think so, because it's just like an imprint. It's just like a photograph, right?
Like we're playing.
Yeah. I will say, and I mean, I will say in my experience with the houses that I live in, that I have lived in, the one before our house in New Orleans, I had a house uptown in New Orleans that was 1856, I think it was built. And it was a really, really haunted house. And I really do feel like I developed a strong connection with the people who lived in that house. I don't know them, right? I actually asked my mom to do a lot of genealogical research. She does a lot of that. And so she was able to give me kind of names and dates and things. And so I did a lot to honor them. I ended up putting up a picture of the matriarch who used to live in that house, and everything shifted after I did that, right? So the spirit people, they absolutely know.
Yeah, yeah. And you're kind of honoring them, and they see that, you know, because they say a lot of times when you do a remodel that that energy will stir up. One, you're stirring up energy, but sometimes they don't necessarily like what you're doing. So that would make sense, that you know, honoring them and bringing it forward.
That's an interesting idea.
Yeah, very interesting.
And the thing is, you know, it's really truly the emotional proximity makes it harder and harder to read stuff, right? And feel things. So the closer you are to somebody, that's why it's so hard to tell, you know, when you're being cheated on, that's so hard to tell when one of your own children or animals is going through something, because emotional proximity, we can't see it clearly. Same thing goes for the houses we live in, right? We would need somebody else really to come in and tell us, you know, I feel like there's an older female spirit here and she has this to say, because wouldn't it be nice if they could just tell us what they wanted to, but that doesn't work like that, right? And the messages really can't come through directly when we are emotionally involved.
Yeah, that makes sense. Very interesting.
Do y'all live in a haunted house?
I don't think so.
I don't think this one is.
No.
I had a friend when I was a kid that had a haunted house, though, and there were residual hauntings there. And then there were some strange things that happened. There were several nights where we would be laying in bed and you could just hear something walking up and down the hallway back and forth.
Yeah.
And there was never anything there. But the story that sticks out the most with me, we were standing down in the den one day and there was always weird things that happened down there. Lights would turn on and off. The TV would turn on and off randomly. But one day he was showing me his grandpa's rifle, and it wasn't loaded. There was absolutely nothing in it. And he pointed it towards where the kitchen was, and he dry fired it. And as soon as he did, the cabinets in that general direction basically exploded.
What?
The doors. Oh, God, yeah.
Well, the physical
the doors
cabinet.
Blew open?
Yeah. The physical cabinet didn't explode, but it, the contents imploded. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Stuff came out.
The
yeah.
doors flew yeah. open. The cups fell out. Adjacent to that, the dishwasher door fell open and some of the dishes fell out. It was the most wild thing I have ever experienced.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope to never see that again.
Yeah, absolutely. That is wild, right? And I mean, knowing what I know about how spiritual energy moves, that spirit was probably building up and building up and building up over so long to be able to do something like that, right?
It may have. And yeah. before they had moved there, the man that lived in that house had actually hung himself in the den where we were standing.
Wow, that's
so there,
wild.
There was a lot of bad energy in that house.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just, you know, I wish my one hope for everybody is that people begin to lose their fear about things like this and lead with curiosity. Now, that's a scary yeah. experience, right? I would have been terrified as well. But yeah. but looking back on it, right, then we can find our curiosity and try to figure out what on earth was that and how did it work? And if we can lead with curiosity rather than fear, that's really the key to beginning to unlock our co-creation with spirit. And if we can really deepen our connection with these guides that everybody has and everybody's come into this world with, that's the key not only to being able to deepen your own intuition, but really being able to lead the life you were always meant to lead.
Well, I don't want to keep you too much longer, but I do have one more question. Is, you know, you do have the numerology side, and then you have the, you know, spiritual side. And a lot of times when people think about spiritual, they're like, there's spiritual and then there's science. There's no in between. How do you connect those and people understand that it is connected? I mean, it is.
Yeah. So that's a question that I get a lot, because I am a scientist and I am a medium. And so I do both. And from my perspective and the way I move through the world, there's no internal tension there between them at all. But I can totally understand why other people think so. But if you think about everything as being electromagnetic energy, right? Just like we were talking, everything is energy. Everything is electricity, for lack of a better word. If we think about it that way, then we can begin to understand, okay, electromagnetic energy is like the magic carpet that spirit rides in on, right? And they're made up of electromagnetic energy. And there are ways to measure this, but the measuring. Now, I'm not talking bad about gadgets. I think they all have a place in a time. And like I said, I've played with them too. I think they're fascinating, but they're just a tool, right? They're just an external tool. Your real value in being able to do this work and connect more is your own internal energetic system. And your ability to feel and intuit in this world is the key to everything. And so there's not really this strange divide between science and spirit nearly as much as people think there is. I think it's all just two interesting and overlapping ways to see the same phenomenon through different lenses.
Makes sense. Well, I thank you so much for joining us. It was so interesting. I'm definitely going to have to look up that book about numerology, because I am completely fascinated.
Yeah, me too.
And like, send me.
You really opened my mind up to a lot of different stuff.
Yeah.
Well, good. I know you got dragged in today, so I'm so super glad you're here. But if you send me y'all's birthdays, if you want to, I'll do you numerology and send
absolutely.
You a little paragraph about you. And I promise I've made a lot of people in this world numerology nerds, and I think I can do it for you guys as well.
I think you've done it. Yes. Well, thank you so much. Well, is there any projects that you want to push out and let anybody know, or where to find you and follow you?
Yes, we. My husband and I. My husband is a TV producer and filmmaker, and you all know what I do. And when we got together this past year, we were trying to think of what can we do that is a fun project that we both bring our talents to, and that we can have an excuse to work together and have fun and all of these things. And we came up with Candlelight Folklore Society, which is this vehicle for research and folklore storytelling about the invisible and the unseen, right? The spirituality in all of our lives. And so we're making these little films and documentaries and stories. We're going to shoot at a cave here in Missouri on Tuesday. So that should be interesting.
Oh, how fun.
So CandlelightFolkloreSociety.com is our website, and I gave you the URL for the YouTube before. It's just @ Candlelight Folklore Society and Candlelight Society on Instagram and social media. But yeah, look us up, and you can learn about the Brumley House and all sorts of different things.
Well, I'll add those links to the show notes, so if anybody wants to find Dr. Hobbs, you sure can. And I think that's all I have, unless if you have anything.
No, that was a fascinating conversation, and I really appreciate
it. Yeah, we can't wait to look into it. So
yes, and I love y'all's podcast. Keep going.
Thank you.
Thank you.